Now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
For people to have love and affection for racing ongoing, if they experience farms and sales and all that sort of stuff, it's just much easier to get your head around why you love it instead of standing in a pub tab putting first fours on and things like that.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
Yes, it is time for Matty Stewart, RSN's racing editor, who joins me live in the studio. And Matty, quite a number of interesting threads from the conversation I just had with Andrew Jones. Obviously, the major issue and talking point in racing over the last week and a bit has been racing schedule, really. The argument of fatigue off the back of those shocking falls. And I thought it was fascinating that Andrew Jones was pretty steadfast that Racing Victoria's viewpoint is that things do need to change as far as the working week, but it's not night racing that needs to change. It's the start of the day, and that is pushing back training times.
Yeah, the problem with that is that solving the riddle of getting trainers to start later is going to be a generational one, but the issue of fatigue, according to a lot of the participants, is the very real one of the current landscape of a lot of twilight yep. and night meetings. So I think there's going to be a tug of war between RV, who are adamant that the fans want night racing and twilight racing, and that's where the raging revenue comes, and that's a completely reasonable position to have. But the participants, until this cultural change of everyone suddenly deciding, yeah, we'll set the alarm at 5 a.m. instead of 3 a.m., which may take 50 years to change. I know Cranbourne and other places, it's a long way away where they can facilitate a revolutionary change in training times.
Do you know why? We should get Neil Bainbridge on. I might do that tomorrow because I don't understand why that would be the case. It seems that Ballarat's been able to go, bang, this trial's doing really well.
I think
Tony McAvoy spoke to us yesterday and said last week and said, we want this to happen.
It's the scale of Cranbourne.
But it's the same size as Ballarat. There's 1,000 horses there, isn't there?
There's three times as many horses in work at Cranbourne, or twice as many. Like, there's 1,200 or 1,300 in work at Cranbourne, and what is it?
There's 1,000 in... Isn't there at Ballarat?
No, I don't think there is, but... anyway, the reasons that have been mooted to me over of recent times have been scale of the training, the number of horses and so on at Cranbourne, you know, workers, maintenance, maintaining the tracks, how do you do it? Do you do a split shift? Pushback from trainers, all these sorts of things that aren't going to change, so they haven't been able to come up with the right model. But it does seem as though Racing Victoria will not budge with night and twilights. The trainers and jockeys will not budge in objecting to any more of it, which Andrew Jones is saying, well, there's not really going to be. But then we come into the discussion about the balance between night racing east and west, and then, yes, Geelong's the obvious. And it was good that he said that because it's so obvious that Geelong is a growth area. It's the second biggest city. Its racing doesn't have as high a profile as Ballarat, Bendigo and other places. It's the best country track in Victoria outside of Pakenham. Mm. It's got the beaches and all. It's this affordable living for trainers and all that sort of stuff. I know there's not a lot of land around the track, but there is some. I wonder whether Geelong's being absolutely maximised for how many people can actually train at the track. So if they implement night racing, which even people who object to night racing are supportive of night racing at Geelong, funny enough.
Where would it fit? Because Caulfield, lights go on. When's that? Late this year?
Who says Caulfield should get night racing other than Caulfield?
Well, I think that was... Why would they be building lights? That was pretty much given the tick of approval from Racing Victoria.
But who's... You know,
as Andrew Jones just said, they are going to take over the slot of Moonee Valley when Moonee Valley's redeveloped for a couple of years.
Yeah, I know, but then Moonee Valley will come back on, and then what happens then? Do they still, you know...
Most likely a Wednesday slot, I think.
Well,
should we have a listen to Josh Blanksby? Because Racing.com, Paul Tatnall went out there, had a look at the redevelopment, and this is what Josh Blanksby had to say about how that Caulfield redevelopment is tracking.
Pretty exciting, bit of a milestone this week with all the course proper turf relayed where the crossings all come together. So that's all down now. So we'll give that a good sort of 3 or 4 months, and really looking forward to be back racing here in July. And as I mentioned, the course proper is down now, so really happy with that. So we just get some good weather now the next few months and back here racing, hopefully for Monash Day or Bletchingley in July. So we'll take our time. And then, yeah, the Caulfield Heath track, we'll give that a little bit longer. That still needs to be re-turfed right around. But, yeah, still aiming sort of around that February 2024. Yeah, we're always very, very comfortable with the design and had really engaged widely on best practice. And, yeah, it's been great to now show people and bring them out here. So we have the Australian Trainers Association out here with a couple of their representatives, and they were really, really impressed. I think they were pleasantly surprised with the width of it. They can see what we were trying to achieve. We had Mick Price out here yesterday having a look around, and yeah, we certainly encourage any of the trainers or jockeys that wanted to come down to have a look to come out and walk around, because it's really taking shape. Yeah, so look, initially I think we'd like to have horses across it in sort of February 2024. We're not rushing. We've learnt lessons from other race clubs around the country that bring back tracks too early, so I'd say you'll see some jump outs and some trials going on. But yeah, we'd like to have some racing probably in that February, March. I think a twilight meetings will work really well here on some Wednesdays, and just really sort of try it out. Lights are coming in. We're aiming to have our lights in place when Moonee Valley shuts, so that's at the end of the Cox Plate 2025. And then yeah, we unashamedly want some night racing here at Caulfield.
So that's the vision, that's the plan from the MRC, and I think gathering from Andrew Jones and the noise, I think that's what most in Racing Victoria consider will be almost a like for like. If you're losing a metropolitan high turnover meeting like Friday nights at Moonee Valley, you want to replace that with a metropolitan racetrack such as Caulfield, not a Pakenham or a Cranbourne, where there is a differential in turnover.
Well, Cranbourne and Pakenham would argue that they are building towards, in every way, being metro status for wagering, quality of racing, quality of horses. So the potential data of those tracks and the way that Sandown filled the void with wagering that sort of leapt very close to what established Caulfield wagering would be proves that are Cranbourne and Pakenham, which already exist, are they reasonable alternatives as a stopgap with the right sort of promotion and encouragement for, pardon me, when, say, Moonee Valley's out of play? Because the issue is going to be when Moonee Valley is back in play, Caulfield isn't going to be filling the void anymore. It's going to be standing there saying, well, now we want a gig as well. We're not just going to retreat because Moonee Valley's back.
And I think Andrew Jones outlined what the vision of the future is. It's possibly Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then a Saturday day meeting. And you could have every week a race-free day on the Victorian racing schedule moving forward, and there'd be no jump outs later in the week. He said we'd get rid of jump outs later on a Friday. You could do jump outs on a Monday and a Tuesday, but then have no racing, maybe even on 2 days if you're doing those.
Well, that's where they have to do what they haven't successfully done before, and that is properly consult all the demographic of the participants, because when they introduced race-free Mondays, it quickly turned out that people saw as many disadvantages as advantages. So whatever revolutionary thing they're going to do to guide us into the future, they've got to make sure that it's well explained and well received by the participants.
Well, I don't think you can argue that Pakenham or Cranbourne would be a more attractive night racing venue on a Friday night than Caulfield, especially when you're looking at people wanting to go to Caulfield. You could get a nice crowd over that summer period at Caulfield. It's close to public transport. It's very close to where a lot of people live, whereas you know how painful it is to try and make the drive to Pakenham and to Cranbourne.
Are these
if you
about
want to go out there
on course, or are they about off course wagering essentially, though?
I think it'd be both. I think Moonee Valley Friday nights, especially during the Christmas period, you do get a lot of people on course.
Gee, you're testing the appetite for people for night racing day after night after night after night. As far as spreading the night racing crowd, I mean, you're asking a lot of them to subdivide themselves four ways and go to four different occasions during the week. So that's another challenge for Racing Victoria, I suppose. So,
but the
Geelong one's interesting. I find that interesting.
And it seems to me that a lot of things are hinging on what potentially occurs with Sandown, because, as Andrew Jones said, they've got this huge parcel of land out near the airport where they can either just sit on the green grass and hopefully let it continue to raise in value, or they build a new racetrack, build a training facility. But as he said, well, we need to know what's going to happen with Sandown. If Sandown stays, we don't need to build. But if we sell Sandown, we could build a replica.
Yep. And Liam O'Keefe and the other trackmen are all going on an international fact-finding mission very soon to try and come up with the right sort of model for Project X out there in the north. So I disagree with Andrew Jones's interpretation of the wagering figures at Sandown. I think they are proven to be close enough to Caulfield when you understand the disadvantage that Sandown has always had of being unpromoted, further away. We had major public transport issues Sandown over the summer, of people being unable to get there because of public transport issues. It's always been branded by its own race club as the midweek workhorse, unattractive wagering sort of track. And Caulfield's always had extremely heavy promotion and bans after the last on Zipping Classic days and so on. So Caulfield has always been given a massive head start by the MRC, and for the wagering figures at Sandown to have been akin to Caulfield, albeit slightly down, I totally disagree with Andrew Jones there. Andrew, I would say that Sandown proved a more than worthy reply. It took the stage and it accepted the role and did extremely well. I don't think anyone could say that it underperformed. And if it was given another 12 months or whatever of continual promotion and growth and splashes of paint and familiarity with punters, it would go past Caulfield. I have absolutely no doubt about that.
You think turnover on Sandown would be stronger and crowds would be stronger than Caulfield?
Not necessarily crowds, but crowds other than on signature days are almost an irrelevant measure these days. No one goes. So what's the point of measuring it?
Well, they do in carnival.
That's what I mean. Outside the signature meetings, crowds are sort of a redundant measure.
So what, in your nirvana for Sandown, would be its place?
Get more meetings off Caulfield, have a more reasonable split between, because of the wide open spaces, less interference, less likelihood of accidents at Sandown. I mean, the data at Sandown would back that up as well. They space themselves. They race more broadly at Hillside. That may not be instantly reflected in wagering, but that's a hell of a good argument, especially right now in the current climate. And so you compare what Sandown Hillside offers in all of those respects to what, regardless of the mood from the MRC, what the basic comparison to the expectation of the inner track at Caulfield is. They're not like for like, are they? They're just simply not.
Gauging by that conversation SMS from our listeners here, there seems to be little to no interest in Sandown. They're just waiting for the sale so they can pump the money into Caulfield and new facilities elsewhere.
That's the vibe I got, yeah.
Why do we need to keep the car racing track at Sandown? There's so much space there for Sandown to transform itself into a world-class track.
The motor racing has the lease was supposed to be up some time ago, but I think it got renegotiated. I thought the cars were going to go to Phillip Island, but it appears as though that's a pretty lucrative lease. So, you know, there's not much they can do about it.
There's been three consecutive weeks of accidents during group racing. Spring is now just around the corner. There needs to be some urgency to properly investigate the causes and address them. To stop it happening again. Just on that, yesterday, and I mentioned it with Andrew Jones, Mark Zarek given 36 meetings. Now, that's a lot. It sounds like a lot. It's a month on the sidelines. Blake Shin, who's going to appeal, got 10 meetings.
Is it a lot?
Well, how many of those meetings would Mark Zarek ride? So
exactly.
He'd maybe ride three meetings a week, maybe. So
if you penalise the meetings he would actually compete at, he's probably been penalised about 10 meetings.
Mate, yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
Yeah.
So it's a month on the sidelines because of the delay for this hearing, which you can understand because Ethan Brown wasn't able to give any evidence. Mark Zara has continued to ride, as has Blake Shin, throughout the most lucrative period of the time here. Rode a Group 1 winner last Saturday. He's going to miss the championships, but are you comfortable with the severity of the fall, severity of the injury to Ethan Brown? And let's take Mark Zara out and Ethan Brown out. Let's call it just a racing incident. Are you comfortable with the severity of penalties for an incident that is so
potentially life-threatening?
Yeah. Do you think it's light? Do you think it's about right?
Well, curious to know what you think as well, but I think there are certain things that are very hard for the racing industry to do to react right now. As Andrew Jones rightly says, they've got to go through the due diligence of talking to the jockeys and having a good think about what these factors might be and fatigue, and then his idea of starting track work later, which is a very good idea, but it's going to take 20 years to implement. So there's a lot of things that, that racing can't do. They just have to hope that things play out. The only thing they can do instantly is dramatically increase penalties. So the Zara penalties feels and looks like an increased penalty, but in reality it's a it's not a great penalty for Mark Zara, and I'm not targeting him. I'm just, he happens to be the jockey in question. Add a zero to the fines. You know, like that's the only thing they...
Well, that's what they did with the whip, excessive whip strikes. It was hit them in the hip pocket. I wonder if that's more of a detriment than time off. Although Andrew Jones did make a good point. He said, I would have thought that the greatest deterrent was not injuring yourself, not falling off.
Yeah, but 200 years of history says that's not you know, they're still daredevil type of people who are, you know, very tough individuals who self-preservations, if they're into self-preservation exclusively, they wouldn't be jockeys. So, yeah, I think it's all very well to say that, but, you know, of course. But anyway, look, I would say to answer your question, I think the only thing they can actually meaningfully do in the short term to prevent, you know, to sort of be on top of the next incident potentially not happening is to slam them with heavier penalties. And it may be a, may not be a cure at all, but it's the only thing I can think of that, that they can actually do.
A couple of SMSs that have come through here. Maybe a radical change, like limiting the number of rides a jockey can have per year. Well, the VGA is steadfast. They do not want to be told. They want to make their own decisions about how many rides a jockey takes. The reason why they can't train later at Cranbourne is because there are so many trainers of 3 to 10 horses in work that have day jobs. It's filled with the older, set-in-their-way trainers.
Yeah, and there was a thought that natural attrition, that training model would probably change at Cranbourne, where the biggest, when the more bigger stables move in, the little two-horse float type of person might be forced to pack in them or somewhere like that. So it's very hard to change the nature of the game when it comes to the trainers, and some, they've all got different stories, and a lot of the trainers I know do have second jobs.
Anyone with half a brain sees Caulfield is a superior option for night racing rather than Geelong. That's from Dave.
But no one's saying they're comparing apples and apples. One's to address the east and west hassle of the trainers in the west being completely unable, basically, to compete at Cranbourne and Pakenham night meetings, and hence the field sizes are reducing all the time at those meetings, because the trainers in Ballarat and Warrnambool have decided there's no way in the world we're going to cross Melbourne to go to a night meeting at Pakenham or Cranbourne.
Here's an option. Why don't they sell Sandown and then put the money into Geelong?
Well, it's just a terrible idea, so why would you do it?
Agree with Maddie on Sandown. Racing was exceptional. Comparing wagering against COVID years is unfair. Personally, I'd much prefer to punt on Sandown than any other track. That's from Andrew. A funny thing, the stewards concluded in the inquiry and handed out the penalties after the carnival ends. Well, that was delayed because Ethan Brown, and they wanted the jockeys involved to be able to give evidence, and that's why the Jamie Carts hearing has not been concluded as well. Accidents happening at Flemington, the biggest track in the country. Can't blame Caulfield, as we're not racing there. It's not about the size of the tracks. Sell half of Sandown, keep it as another Geelong, and Pakenham and Cranbourne, out of city, near the country. That's from Dave. A couple of other things I want to talk about. In good news yesterday, Ben Mellum talking about Jamie Carr. She's on the improve. Interesting, the conversation that you had a little later on the Big V with the shadow racing minister in Tasmania about that Ben Yole investigation from the ABC and what Tasmanian racing and also the racing minister had been doing about that. Here's a grab from Dean Winter, the shadow minister yesterday, on what he wants to occur in Tasmania re these allegations.
Well, I'll be disappointed. Look, if the government supports this minister any longer, I mean, she's already survived one this year after she was caught lying about the departure or the reasons for the departure of the Tas Racing CEO. We don't expect that the government... we don't think the government should support her any longer, and we're calling on her to resign. We're calling the Premier to remove her. Look, we'll wait and see what happens tomorrow. I certainly hope that we can move on from the portfolio, because I love Tasmania racing. We want to see it stronger, but it's clearly not going in the right direction with her at the helm.
Well, tomorrow that he's referring to there is today in Parliament in Tasmania, where, according to Dean Winter, the Shadow Racing Minister, they are going to push for a vote of no confidence in Madeleine Ogilvie. She's only been there 5 minutes, the Racing Minister, and call for her to be removed from that post. So,
has there been any comment from the Racing Minister?
Madeleine Ogilvie made a press statement yesterday where she reiterated that Tasmanian government, her department, and therefore the integrity officials in Tasmania are absolutely committed to upholding integrity. She said she treats the allegations of race fixing and so on and team driving as very seriously, and she's announced an independent review into the accusations brought up by the ABC after. The Dean Winter described it, I think he pitched a line from 10, 15 years ago, the darkest day in sport, but it certainly grabbed a few. But it's going to be interesting.
But why has that statement come out now? Because the ABC did an expose? Because the Shadow Minister has called for her to stand down? Why wasn't that statement made
when the allegations were made? Well, yeah. Months ago.
Months ago.
Like when the... when the complaints were made, and going back, you know, and according, if you read the ABC story, they are very stark accusations, you know. So now, so what will upset a lot of people and probably fuel Dean Winter and a few others is the only statement of concern expressed by the state government is off the back of a news report, not off the back of the actual allegations, which they were obviously had to be aware of. So... Oh, maybe it is the darkest day in Tasmanian racing, but and as you know, this Benyol, and I think he's got obviously, and if he's listening, we'd love to have a chat. You have every right to talk about, you know, to establish your position on this. He has a strong connection to a Victorian stable. There's another story there as well, which we might take up with HRV. So you know, there's a hell of a lot going on, but I think Benyol has obviously been put through the ringer, and I think, in fairness, Benyol is entitled to state whatever he wants to state about his situation.
So we'll await to see what occurs in Tasmania today in regards to that. Yet a bitty, a busy news day. You had a very busy news day on the Big V yesterday, because you also spoke to Tiak, our boss, Dave Ellis. A big weekend for them, and he indicated that we could see a lot more Tiak, our horses, here in Australia.
Well, we're looking forward to starting a stable in Australia in the next 12 months. We were going to do it, and then COVID came. So we're looking at some options at the moment that I think our owners will find very exciting.
Isn't it the greatest no-brainer in racing that Tiako should have a base in Australia? Like it's extraordinary that it hasn't happened. They are the superpower of New Zealand racing. Jamie Richards set all sorts of records, and then Mark Walker's sort of walked back in. They are way too big to not have an Australian base. So it was interesting that off the back of us tweeting that Tiako Racing sort of came back with, hey, well, cool your jets. So maybe David Ellis let a cat out of the bag there. But I did say Macedon, he said no. I did say Scone, he said no. So it just seems obvious that they have to have 50 horses in work at a major metro, you know.
Who would be the trainer?
Yeah, well, it would have to be probably someone internally that you and I have never heard of, but that's the way it rolls, like the Neesham-type person coming through. But
you reckon?
Are you on a glamour appointment, don't you?
No. I'm just wondering, if you're going to be a Tiako trainer, you're a Tiako trainer. So you wouldn't be able to have, well, the model they run. Your own horses are individual horses outside. So.
But I think they'd be trained by Mark Walker, but they would just be a four-person in the Australian stable. Yeah, I don't know what the rules... I don't know how the rules work, but... Daniel O'Sullivan, our guru, our favourite guru, he's given his appraisal of the weekend, the performances, and I think it's always interesting because he tends to sort of put the brakes on some and then puts a length on others, which is interesting. For instance, Prowess, who bought Roger James to tears, according to the raw figures from Daniel O'Sullivan, that wasn't a super high rating performance in knocking off Pavitra and so on in the Vinery. It was 100. You know, if everyone's familiar with it, so 100 is where she sits, which isn't through the roof. Imperatriz is the one who really burst the blocks. 103.3 for the William Reid. Bella Nipotina was 101 in that race. Rockin' Horse was a 98.
What did the Melbourne Cup winner rate?
Hang on, I'm just trying to go through the figures here. Cirileo Miss, this is extraordinary. Talk about a once-in-a-lifetime performance. 103.5. Cirileo Miss rated higher than Imperatriz. So there you go. You've got to take them on face value. Not an Option was a 96.8. Bandersnatch, a 100.2. Arapahoe, who won the Tancred, 101, same as Cascadian in winning the Australian Cup. So that's an interesting performance there. Goldman ran a 101 as well. So Goldman, who's now got no weight and guaranteed to start in the Melbourne Cup, has just rated on par with a $8 million multiple weight for age winner. And just a comparison, Tancred winners year to year, this is how weak the race was this year. Arapahoe, the Indian, ran a 101. Dewis last year ran a 105.5. So Dragonette ran a 103.5. Very Elegant a 107. Mm. Avilius 106. Almandon 102. Jamaica 108. So Arapahoe isn't going to go into the Tancred Hall of Fame.
So 108 Jamaica, 107 Very Elegant. And it's, what was it, 100 this year? 101?
101.
Those Caulfield Cup winners and Melbourne Cup winners were 107, 108. What was Goldman again on the weekend?
Yeah, but you're not seeing the whole picture with Goldman. You're not seeing guaranteed start featherweight, are you, rapid improver?
Well, we'll find out a little bit more because Scott Darby from Darby Racing, who put the syndicate together and bought the horse from New Zealand, will join us a little later before 11 o'clock. Bit of news this morning too. I'm Thunderstruck has been sent to the paddock. Yep. Mick Price and Junior not happy with his work this morning. They're going to give him a rest. And speaking of I'm Thunderstruck, Terry Henderson from OTI will join me live in the studio tomorrow at 10:30. They've got a big hand in Sydney for day one of the championships, where the barrier draws and final fields are now just starting for the four big group ones. So we'll filter those through to you as well. Matty, just a quick one before we wind it all up. Entain, interestingly, yesterday purchasing the New Zealand tab. It's a huge deal. It'll be ratified by the New Zealand government, but I wonder whether that means that Entain, who are going to be very keen to be bidding on the Victorian tab licence as well, whether that will embolden them. So it's a 25-year deal, and $1 billion New Zealand. It's going to mean a lot more money put into New Zealand racing prize money and infrastructure as well.
So it could be a precursor, you think, to our arrangement.
Well, it'd certainly give them a lot of synergy and strength if Entain was the major player in Victoria as well. Speaking to Andrew Jones, there's no foresight on what that will look like, whether it will be one entity, a monopoly like the tab, or whether they will spin off different bits to different wagering providers.
Absolutely. We're going to have a chat to Taylor Childs on the Big V, amongst other things today. She's the lovely daughter of Greg Childs and the twin sister of Geordie Childs, and she's got one ride today at Ballarat. She rode the race of the century at Warrnambool on Sunday. We got the audio from that for Lindsay Smith, and she's going to reflect on both she and Geordie learned the ropes at the Tullamarine Pony Club out near the airport. So we're going to have a chat to Taylor and other stuff. We might even try and tap into the Tasmanian Parliament if we can. Have we got a roving reporter down there? Is Bensley down there?
Well, Hoss is everywhere else. He's gone down there.
Bendigo CEO Rob, I can't pronounce his surname. Rob, the Bendigo Jockey Club, looks like a typo, is going to join us to look ahead to the Golden Mile. And I want to have a chat to Luke Rayner, the CEO of Geelong, because we may as well jump on this wave before it starts about the resurgence of the brand of the Geelong Racing Club, I reckon. I'm getting the vibe that it's even RV, which has been very city-centric over the years, seems to be stretching its vision down the highway.
Very good, Matty. We will see you on the Big V.
Righto.